All right, Josh, can you define the United States?
I mean, really, we shouldn't need to define the United States for a debate. I mean, we all know what this is, but we're talking about the 50 United Political Units that are the states.
Whoa, okay. You're forgetting something here.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are.
50 United States. We all know what these are.
No. What about Puerto Rico?
Puerto Rico's not. It's not part of... Well, I mean, it is part of the United States, but it's not a state.
Oh, but if I stretch the definition just enough, I think we would be able to get there where Puerto Rico is considered a state.
You want to consider Puerto Rico a state? Then Puerto Rico needs to pay its taxes.
Oh. That's awkward.
Oh! Silence. If Puerto Rico is going to have statehood, then Puerto Rico has to assume the burdens of statehood. You can't have benefits without responsibilities, Ethan.
I see that.
But Puerto Rico is a territory. So if you want to extend the definition to include if Puerto Rico is a territory, I would certainly grant you that.
That's really interesting how definitions work and how far you can extend them without being really, really irritating.
That's right. And as we've already demonstrated, the way you define terms can certainly make other people feel awkward at random moments.
And it certainly can define the round as well.
Oh, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to What's the Rez?
How convenient.
An ongoing conversation about the current resolutions in the world of high school debate. My name is Josh Herring. I'm a debate coach at Thales Academy in Rollsville, North Carolina. Today I'm joined by Ethan Delves, and we are going to be discussing the role of definitions in debate.
That's right.
Okay, so Ethan, let's just start this off. So what role do definitions play in a debate? Why should we care about definitions?
Definitions are the foundation of the round. Without definitions in a round, you simply cannot debate the round. Nothing makes sense. Usually you define definitions in pretty much any type of debate at the very, very beginning of the case, maybe after a short introduction, and even that sometimes includes definitions. Definitions are how you limit the debate in a good kind of way, not which I think we'll get into a crazy type of way that I've seen before, but you respectfully towards the other team limit the round to what should be talked about and what shouldn't be talked about by putting definitions on there. It kind of frames the round in a sort of way so that you can argue with fair ground on both sides and you can have a debate that builds the educational experience without going outside of what's being talked about.
So it's really critical then that we define the terms no matter which style of debate we're doing.
Absolutely.
So whether it's whether we're doing public forum or Lincoln Douglas or Coolidge, we've got to define the terms. Now, where are these terms coming from? Are we just making up these terms, or are they located somewhere?
Oh wow, they're located in the resolution for sure. Define the terms of the resolution, or any term that you bring in, maybe an ambiguous term that kind of goes along with the resolution. So I would bring an example of a value that's not in the resolution, but it certainly should be defined because that is also an essential part of the framework of the entire round for LD debate. And in public forum or policy, you'd have the elements of your plan. If anything needs to be defined there, make sure you get that straight because people will attack you on it if you don't.
That's definitely true. Now, you used a really good word there that I want to make sure our audience understands. What is this word ambiguous? What does ambiguous mean?
Ambiguous means that there's room for confusion, I think is my simplest way of putting it, where one term could mean this, but it could be stretched to mean this. It also could mean that. And if you don't nail down that ambiguity and make sure that people know what part of that term you're talking about or what, I guess, like essence in what way are you talking about that term, then you can't have a debate because one person could be arguing about one thing and one person could be arguing about something completely different. And sometimes this is really hard to see when it's happening, but it can capture the judge in a way where an argument may sound more convincing under a slightly different definition that shouldn't be a part of the round when that definition sneaks in there without being noticed.
That's totally true. And I have sat in on some of the most painful rounds I've had to judge involve teams that don't realize that they actually are operating under different definitions from the same term. So we might have anytime we have a definition that uses the word good or better or best, that we're already in the realm of one of the most ambiguous words in the English language. Because if we have teams that disagree on what the best option is, but they don't realize they disagree, their arguments don't actually clash with each other. Instead, they sort of become parallel lines going in opposite directions.
Yeah, and I think there's some cases in which people can really stretch definitions to where they shouldn't be. And I've been in some of those situations, and it's made me absolutely livid. It's not something that you want
to
do.
Well, we'll get to some good examples of that hopefully in just a moment.
Oh, but I have those.
Let's start with the affirmative team. Ethan, what does it mean that the affirmative team has the burden of definition?
Right. So the affirmative team in any type of debate has what Josh describes as the burden of definition. This means that the affirmative team has to come to the table with definitions to begin a round. The affirmative team is, in most styles of debate, unless it's like public forum where you flip a coin, but an LD debate for sure, the first team that goes up there and sets the ground for what the round is going to look like. These are the definitions. The negative's job is to refute those definitions if it deems necessary, if it thinks the affirmative definitions are inadequate or not fair, they restrict the round in a way that should not be restricted, then the negative team can come back and say that, and even have alternative definitions prepared that are more fair. But in the very first principle, the affirmative team has the obligation to come into the round with set definitions for what the round should be. And it's up to the negative to accept or reject that.
Which means that really in any kind of resolution analysis on either side, affirmative or negative, pro or con, it's vital that the debaters research all possible definitions.
Right, because some of them fit the resolution better. Like, you have to think about terms in context of the resolution, because terms do have very different definitions, but sometimes that definition is not one you should be using in the middle of a round. And there are plenty of times when people will do this, and plenty of times people will say, oh, this word is defined this way, therefore let's just stick it in the resolution and hope it works. That's not the way it works. The resolution calls for a certain definition, and I think using reasonable judgment, most people can think of what the real or the definition should be.
Sure. Now, I remember one round we did in class where we had the resolution resolve, sharks are our friends. One of my students, Haley, loves that resolution because she just thinks sharks are the coolest animal on the planet.
And they're pretty cool.
I made her argue the neg because that's her favorite resolution. And she and her partner pulled a bit of a trick because when the affirmative team defined sharks as your typical shark animal in the ocean and so on, it's going to eat you or whatever. Haley then said, no, that's not the kind of shark this resolution is talking about. This shark is actually talking about a money shark, a loan shark. And by changing the definition, now, she had an uphill battle to prove why that definition was better than the assumed definition of the shark, the
animal. Especially on the side of the negative, where your job is to refute bad definitions, not propose bad definitions yourself.
Right. But in doing that, in proposing a different definition, if she wins that argument about why her definition is right, she shifts the ground of the debate onto much friendlier territory to her position.
And how do you know if you've won on definitions? Is there some sort of agreement, and maybe in cross-examination somewhere? Or where
sometimes, I've seen that happen where really debaters will make a strategic choice. Where really, this can go one of two ways. Either the debate then, when you have a disagreement about definitions, that really becomes the foundational element of the debate. And both sides are bringing every possible argument to bear about their definition. But you can also sometimes have in crossfire or a later rebuttal speech where one side will decide, no, the debate is not about the definition, and I will yield this definition to my opponent so that I can then refocus the judge on the core argument that I want to then use to crystallize the round.
Yeah, and I've also seen both things happen where debaters will come to a consensus and go back to what the arguments were. And I think in really dense resolutions, you'll see that happen a little bit more because people have prepared such amazing arguments that they want to say those. And people and debaters refer to when this doesn't happen as a definitions debate. And it was like, oh, it just went to definitions and it was terrible because the entire time we were arguing what, you know, market rate housing is or what drugs are or something crazy, because sometimes that'll get completely out of hand. But the other team will accuse. So one team will accuse the other, like, this team is purposefully manipulating the definitions in a direction that's more towards their favor because their arguments aren't sufficient to support their position, which is an argument that I hear in a definitions debate a lot, that the other team is afraid to define it as it really is because they don't have enough ground to cover themselves when it comes to what the word actually means.
Sure. And from the judge's perspective, I tend to favor the affirmative team on definitions if the affirmative team has brought, as you put it earlier, a reasonable definition. But then I'm willing to hear from the negative side why their definition is better. And sometimes it definitely happens where the negative team either does not bring a definition or they bring such a bad definition that we're going to have a terrible debate. I'm thinking of our recent, we had our episode on the Lincoln Douglas drugs resolution. If an affirmative team brought a resolution and said, really, this debate should be all about students, and maybe they define drugs as pills that are stored in dad's shaving kit, and they're illegal because a kid is going in and getting them.
Right.
Well, but see, then the negative has an easy opportunity on that point to come by and say, no. First off, that's not what this resolution is talking about. Secondly, you just wasted all of the effort that I put into writing my case, actually preparing for a reasonable definition. So one of negative's responses there can be to accuse affirmative of wasting everyone's time in that round with a bad definition.
Yeah, so the point of debate is not to harp on technicalities of definition and to battle your way through that or participate in all these methods that won't really heighten the educational experience that you're getting, but the purpose of debate is to actually have a debate and not to win on those small technicalities that'll bring you the trophy. But what you want is a debate that's about the arguments themselves, mm-hmm. the logic that the debaters use, and the evidence they bring to the table.
And to get there, we need commonly agreed upon terms.
Yeah.
We can't do that without those.
And a quick tip for the negative team, if the affirmative team provides definitions that you're okay with and that makes sense, don't waste your time proposing new definitions for no reason, because in most styles of debate, I know public forum negative has the same amount of time as the affirmative does for constructive speeches. In LD debate, the negative team actually has a minute longer. So the affirmative team has 6 minutes for constructive, the negative has 7. The negative team, you can make a real advantage out of how much time that you have if you skip those definitions and you agree with the affirmatives, if they're reasonable. You have 7 minutes to completely, one, flesh out your case, and two, even get to refuting the affirmative's case for that extra time that you've saved yourself.
That's a great bit of advice. And one piece of advice I'd offer to both sides, affirmative for meeting the burden of definition and neg as being ready if affirmative drops the ball on definitions, focus on the key terms of whatever the resolution is. Often resolutions will have, they'll have filler words, they'll have some adjectives, they'll have some prepositional phrases. You don't need to define every word or every term in a resolution.
Right.
And often we can simply all agree that the United States federal government means literally Congress and its ability to write laws, and the president signs them and they're enforced by the judiciary. You don't need to waste everyone's time with defining the U.S. federal government. We can assume that. But if you wanted to define market rate housing, that's probably a key term in a debate in the public forum debate for March. If you were going to define the national debt, that was a key term
right.
for our most recent Coolidge debate. Or if you were going to define illegal drugs, that would be a critical term in the March-April Lincoln Douglas resolution. The key terms are what require definition.
Agreed.
Now, Ethan, as we kind of move towards wrapping up our first technique episode. It's kind of cool that we actually have a technique episode now.
Yeah.
There's at least two different kinds of definitions. Are you familiar with the difference between use definitions and official definitions?
Yeah, I think I know where you're going with this, because the official definition is like the dictionary definition with no context kind of pre-thought out, I think is what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And then the use definition is where you're putting the definition in context of what the resolution entails and kind of fitting it to fit the round more. Is that
not
what you're saying?
Not quite. You were right about the official dictionary definition.
Okay.
I mean, that's certainly a critical way to get your definitions. To find that's an authoritative source that's often very good. The trouble is that sometimes we're defining terms that are actually used in a particular trade or craft.
Okay.
So like the dictionary, or it's a particular phrase that's made up of words in the dictionary. Like let's take market rate housing. Market rate and housing are all going to be three particular words that Merriam-Webster will define. But if you just assemble those three, you're going to be talking about something different than the National Realtors Association means by market rate housing.
Right. And so it would be better to take a definition from the Real Estate Association than it
exactly.
would be from adding the definitions of three separate words that Merriam-Webster would have to offer.
So this is why sometimes for an LD resolution, you might get a good definition for your value, like say justice.
Right.
Maybe the dictionary has a good definition, or maybe there's a Supreme Court justice who, in the middle of a decision that he's written, he goes ahead and defines justice in the way that he means for that court case. And maybe you take that definition and say, here's how a United States Supreme Court justice actually defines justice in the court system, and that's a superior definition to the dictionary.
Right.
And that can often be a way to get a bit more nuance, and it can be another way your definition ties more tightly to your arguments.
Yeah, I can see how that works. That's a fair argument for sure.
Now, the last thing we probably should mention, at least as my last bit of closing advice, and I'd love if you have any definition advice, we should get that out, or any examples. I forgot to circle back to some examples.
Oh, yeah, I have one of those.
Definitely one of the key things I'm always on the lookout for when I'm judging around is that the definitions that students give me at the beginning of their cases line up with the way they use those terms in their arguments.
Oh, okay.
If those fail to line up, your case is not nearly consistent enough, and that's going to be a major problem that I'm expecting the opposition to exploit.
Right, yeah, I would completely agree with you, and I think that just to kind of bring an example to enhance this episode a little bit that I've told you many times, so I think our listeners might enjoy, is my number one piece of advice: don't be irritating with definitions. You know what a word means. You know what it means in context of the resolution. So say that and make sure that your arguments line up with that, because there are arguments that will line up with it. And if you don't like the arguments on that side of position, remember, part of the game, part of playing the game, is dressing yourself as that side of the resolution, which means bearing the definitions that make sense on that side of the resolution. I remember that this was, I defined safety for a case that I had in an LD debate. It was actually this year at Durham Academy. And I defined it as a good thing that people want. Like, or I didn't, you know, hard define it like that. Like, I didn't propose that definition. I thought that, you know, safety is a good thing. And that's, you know, part of what it is. People want to be safe.
Sure.
But my opponent came around and no, safety is terrible. You know why? You know what he told me in cross-examination? He says safety is bad because if every single member of the population of the entire earth were locked in prison, they would be safe, but it would be bad. And we spent the entire cross-examination debating, like, how would this work? I was like, oh, who would feed these people? Who would take care of these people? Where are you going to get 7.6 billion jail cells from? This guy, and unfortunately, and I'll sadly admit, he won that round somehow, and I don't know. So if unnamed debater, if you're out there listening to this, you know I'm thinking of you. And this has scarred me for life and stuck with me. But yes, he was trying to be irritating with the definition, extending with some sort of fallacy you told me about to the farthest reach of the imagination, how safety could be bad by locking every member of the entire globe in a jail cell. You know what safety means, and if you want to disagree with my value and value criterion, well, buddy, propose a better one, because that's the way to do it.
I hate to break it to you, Ethan, but that is a valid argumentative strategy. That I'm not saying it's necessarily a good one, but that's the reductio ad absurdum. That's reducing your opponent's argument to an absurdity where you extend it to its furthest possibility and say, look, what you're proposing is actually this, but you just aren't quite willing to bring it to see it in that light. And it's very valid. It's a very effective way to kind of, as one author named Francis Schaeffer put it, to blow the roof off of someone's mind, where they think they accept a certain set of ideas, but then you show them, look, your ideas actually mean this.
I think the biggest problem with that is you need to make sure that those actual ideas, you know, actually do mean that, because then you could prove that anything is bad. He could have said that food is bad because if I stuff you silly, then you're going to die. I mean, I think that maybe that's an argumentative strategy in some areas, but come on. Like, you know, everything in moderation here. People would like to be safe. Not everybody's in jail. I think we could agree on that.
I'll return your Aristotle quote with just pointing out to Jonathan Swift's novel, Gulliver's Travels, where Gulliver goes, and first he goes to the tiny people, and then he goes to the land of the giants. And part of what Jonathan Swift is getting at there is that in one sense, it's all about perspective.
Right.
Because when you see things from a giant perspective, looking at 6-inch tall people, but then you see other things when you're 6 inches tall in comparison to the giants, Gulliver sees different things because his perspective changed. So in one sense, I agree with you. It is about having the right extension of your definition, but it is still a valid argument to reduce the opponent's claim to an absurdity.
Yeah, and I think that to just to kind of sum it up, the best things to do with your definitions is, as you said, make sure that your definitions match up with the way you propose your contentions, and, you know, use your contentions in the rebuttal. Make sure those definitions are consistent throughout the entire round, or you pretty much define something for no reason because it means something else later. I completely agree with that. And I also think that you should not be irritating with definitions. Say what you mean. The point of debate is not to argue on definitions and hopefully win yourself the round over something that wasn't even educational and meaningful. Debate is meaningful, and it should be kept that way. Don't be irritating. Define things the way they are, and I assure you there's ground on each side.
Wow, and I would probably just add in as one last bit that if your opponent defines terms badly, and I think I'm going to disagree a bit with you, Ethan, I think it is often worth chucking everything and making the argument all about the definition. If the opponent misdefines the terms, that can be a great way to really win the heart of the debate through the correct definition.
Yeah, I can see exactly what you mean.
So thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us today on What's the Res? Before we close, this does have something to do with a kind of argument called topicality.
That's
Ethan,
right.
What do definitions have to do with topicality?
Okay, so topicality is basically, it's a negative strategy towards or against the affirmative team. That's saying that the affirmative team has made a case that is completely off topic and doesn't make any sense under the resolution whatsoever, which sometimes the negative can call topicality on the affirmative team, but the negative has to be ready to really defend their position on that. And fortunately, I've never run into a situation where, one, I had to do that, or two, someone else has done that to me, because I always make my cases very specific to the resolution, and I don't like to go outside of where the definition should go. But if the affirmative team has made a case that has nothing to do with the resolution at all, which actually I think I did call topicality one time, because one time I went against a team where they proposed the wrong case. They just read the opposite case. And there goes topicality.
That's a mistake.
Yeah, but if the affirmative team comes out with something that is not whatsoever related to the resolution, the negative team has the obligation to call topicality on that and say, the affirmative team is wrong in doing that, and here's why.
And topicality was an argument I used in college on the Hillsdale College debate team for my one semester on with them, and we had a saying on the team, all in on tea, because if you manage to, we were debating team parliamentary style at that point, and for in that style, if you can win the topicality argument, you literally win the entire debate, because
that's
you've
right.
proven that you are within the limitations of the resolution, and that the other team is not.
Yeah.
So with that, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us on What's the Res? An ongoing conversation about the current resolutions in the world of high school debates. Join us next time for more What's the Res?